to some of the definitions on the pages that I've given you there. What comes to your mind when you talk about consistency? Well, that's a great illustration. None of my cars ever have cruise control that works. But that's how it's supposed to work, right? Yeah, you set it and forget it. Is that? Anyway, set it and forget it. That's something else. But anyway, you set it and the speed is never supposed to change. Well, that was a great picture. All right? Anybody else? Yes, ma'am. Reliable. Perfect. Anybody else? Using the same standards across every area, whatever it is. Perfect. It's exactly right. That's exactly what it means. It means you stay the same, right? It means you don't shift around according to your circumstances. It means you aren't subject to the prevailing winds of the culture, okay? It means you can count on it. There's something you can absolutely count on. No matter what. And that was Daniel. Look with me at verse 4 now. Verse 4, this is before these officials begin plotting against Daniel. This is just a commentary on Daniel's life here in verse 4 of chapter 6. It says, while these folks were trying to figure out how to get Daniel in some way, the other supervisors and the governors tried to find something wrong with the way Daniel administrated the empire, but they couldn't. Because Daniel was reliable, that's a word that you used a minute ago, and did not do anything wrong or dishonest. Some translations say there was no error or fault found in him. You know what that means? That means Daniel didn't come across one way on Sunday and another way on Monday. He wasn't one way in church, and another way, at school or at work or with his friends. He wasn't reading his Bible in public, but then turning around and looking at pornography on his phone or his computer when nobody else was around. See, Daniel wasn't involved in anything that was unquestionable. Or anything that was questionable. Sorry. Anything that smacked of being wrong or out of balance or just something he shouldn't be doing. He wasn't involved in any of that, and even his enemies knew it. Let me tell you another thing that makes this amazing. Daniel worked in government. In government. For 70 years. Now, what do you call that besides a miracle? Yeah, you call that consistency, right? Integrity. For 70 years, he had worked for the government. And yet, he was faithful. Verse 4, no error, no fault was found in him. Now, why is that so important? Why was that important for Daniel, and more critically tonight? Why is that important for you? Why is that important for me? Okay, how can we live a life of consistent, God-honoring, faithful lives, the kind of life that Daniel lived, so that we can stand up, stand out, and stand firm for God in a godless culture? All right, let me share three things with you tonight. And we'll try to speed through these here a little bit. Here's the first one. If I want to be able to stand up and stand out and stand firm for God in a godless culture, I must be unyieldingly consistent, number one, in my walk. I must be unyieldingly consistent in my walk. Now, when I talk about my walk, I'm talking about my walk with God. I'm talking about my own personal relationship with Jesus Christ as it is fleshed out in my life every single day. If I want to live for God in a godless culture, if I want to be able to stand up and stand out and stand firm in my faith when the culture is pushing me and pressuring me to do everything that everybody else is doing, If I really want to be victorious in my Christian life, if I want to have an impact, if I want to make a difference, my walk with God must be consistent. See, this has got to be woven into the very fabric of my life, the fabric of who I am, so that it directs everything. My decision making, my priorities, it orders my thoughts and it frames and controls my actions. And it does that everywhere. It does that all the time. That was Daniel's walk. He didn't vacillate. He didn't change. He wasn't shifting back and forth. See, when these government officials got together to plot against Daniel, when they began to really dig deep into his life to find something that they could use against him, what did they discover? Look at verse 5. They were digging deep. And when they'd finished, they said, "We will never find any ground for complaint against this Daniel unless we find it in connection with the law of his God." Can you imagine that? The only thing they could say about Daniel was that he was totally sold out to God. That's what they're saying. And suddenly it comes to their minds, this realization, wait a minute. If we can somehow force Daniel to have to make a choice between the laws of his God and the laws of the Medo-Persian Empire, the king, we know what he's going to choose. Because he always does. He is so consistent. He's going to choose the laws of his God. He always does that. We can count on him doing that. That's how we'll get him. Students, this absolutely screams out at us about the importance of the consistency of Daniel's walk. His character never changed. His convictions never wavered. His courage never flagged. And everybody, again, even the folks who hated him, his most bitter enemies, knew that about his life. I thought about that and I thought, you know, most of us can find ourselves in certain times and in certain circumstances, and in certain company, and in certain places, maybe like here at student conference, we can be pretty consistent. We can feel pretty good about our walk with God. But do you realize God isn't looking for certain time, certain circumstance, certain company, certain place Christians? He's looking for all the time, everywhere, in whatever company, in whatever circumstance, Christians whose walk with Him is what? Consistent. So consistent that like Daniel, our walk with Him is going to be faithful, it's going to be obedient, no matter where we are, no matter what we're doing. So, if you want to be able to stand out, stand up and stand firm, here's the first thing. You've got to be consistent in your walk, okay? Your relationship with Christ in every area of your life, all the time. Second thing, if I want to stand up, stand out, and stand firm for God in a godless culture, I must be unyieldingly consistent in my worship. I must be unyieldingly consistent in my worship. Now, please don't confuse worship with what we've done here tonight or this week. That what we've done here tonight is we've sung. That's part of worship. It is an aspect of worship. It is absolutely an act of worship. But what we're talking about here with Daniel goes much, much deeper than that. Okay? Look at verse 10. I'll show you. Daniel gets word now in verse 10 about this new law that's just gone into effect. Can't pray to anybody but the king for the next 30 days. What does Daniel do? Let's read. Now when Daniel knew that the document had been signed, the document that says you can't pray to anybody but the king for the next 30 days, he went home to his upstairs room where he had the windows open toward Jerusalem. And three times a day he got down on his knees and he prayed and he gave thanks to his God just as he had done before. Now you know, that ain't smart. I mean, that is not very intelligent. The king has just said, you can't pray to any God except me for the next 30 days. He's just issued this decree that if you do, you get thrown into the lion's den. But Daniel not only prayed to God, this verse says he opened the windows of his room so that anybody who happened to be coming by could look inside and see what he was doing. It was obvious he was disobeying the king's edict, right? I mean, why couldn't he have just prayed silently? Why couldn't he have just gone into his prayer closet? Nobody would have known. Why couldn't he have done it maybe one time a day? I mean, really early in the morning, right? While all these other goobers were asleep. Early in the morning, you know, 3 a.m. or something. Everybody else is you know, Z'd out. He could have done it then. But no. Open windows. Three times a day. What in the heck was he thinking? Okay? Well, this brings us face to face, eyeball to eyeball, with the idea of real worship. Let me help you with this word worship. You can fill in the blanks here. The word worship, our English word worship, actually comes from an old English word which means worth-ship. W-O-R-T-H-S-H-I-P. Worth-ship. You see, when you worship, what you are doing is declaring that there is something, there is someone who has ultimate worth, ultimate value in your life. For Daniel, that was God. God occupied the position of ultimate value, ultimate worth. So God and faithfulness to God was more valuable to Daniel than even his own life. So he wasn't going to hide this thing. Right? He was determined to show the world what was of ultimate worth in his life. That's what worship is. It is demonstrating to the world what has ultimate worth, the ultimate valuable thing in our lives. Now, if we go to the New Testament itself and we look at the Greek word for worship that we find in the New Testament, the word proskuneo, that word literally means to bow down or to prostrate yourself before someone. Okay, so worship means that you recognize not only that someone has ultimate worth in your life, but that someone has ultimate authority over your life. Right? And again, for Daniel, that was God, not King Darius. God was the one who had ultimate authority. So when Daniel went up to his room and he opened the windows and he got down on his knees and he prayed to God three times a day, he was doing a whole lot more than just having his own personal worship service. He was demonstrating openly, obviously, what was of ultimate worth in his life and who had the ultimate authority in his life. And let me tell you, this was not a one-shot deal with Daniel. Okay? Because verse 10 says, look at this. I think I've got that part of the verse underlined. It says, he got down on his knees and he prayed and he gave thanks to God just as he had done before. That means for 70 years. See, this wasn't just a spiritual move for the day, folks. This wasn't something he was doing just to make a political statement or to prove that he wasn't afraid of the king. This was his life. His worth-ship was consistent. His submission to the authority of God over his life was consistent. This is real worship. And this is what Romans chapter 12, verse 1 tells us, if you look at that verse. Therefore, Paul said, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your what? What does it say? This is your true and proper what? Worship. Paul is reminding us of what Daniel is illustrating for us. If our main understanding of worship is that it is something we do on Sundays when we go to church, or it's something we do at youth conference when we have our evening or morning meetings, we've missed it. Yes, we go to church to worship God, but we go to church to do corporately what we should have been doing individually and personally every single day in our schools, at home, in the workplace, with our friends, as we lay our lives on the altar before God and consistently live out the worth of Jesus Christ and bow to His authority every day in every area and in every circumstance. That's worship. That's worship. So if I want to stand up and stand out and stand firm for God in a godless world, I must be consistent in my worship. Okay? Third thing here. If I want to stand up, stand out, and stand firm in my faith, I must be unyieldingly consistent in my witness. I must be unyieldingly consistent in my walk. I must be unyieldingly consistent in my worship. And I must be unyieldingly consistent in my witness. Now, things get interesting here. When King Darius finds out that Daniel has disobeyed his edict and prayed to his God instead of to him, he didn't really want to throw Daniel into the lion's den, okay? Again, he let his ego get the best of him. He did all kinds of things he shouldn't do. Nevertheless, because of the law of the Medes and the Persians, he was going to have to throw his top official, his prime minister, into the lion's den. He didn't want to do that. But he didn't have a choice. If you look at verses 14 and 15, I don't think I have those in your booklet, but you can look at them if you have your Bible here. It said, the king, when he heard these words, was much distressed, or heard about the fact that Daniel had not obeyed, was much distressed and set his mind to deliver Daniel. And he labored all until the sun went down to rescue him. Then these men came by agreement to the king and said to him, King, you need to know, this is the law of the Medes and the Persians that no injunction or ordinance that the king established will be changed. So, here's the situation, okay? King didn't want to throw him in the lion's den. He didn't have a choice. So, verse 16, you can look at that. So the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel, and they threw him into the lion's den. But I want you to look at what Darius said to Daniel before he threw him in the lion's den. This is the last part of verse 16 there. I think I've got it underlined maybe too in your booklet. This is his final words to Daniel before he goes into the lion's den. Darius says to Daniel, may your God, watch this, whom you serve sometimes, occasionally, oh, I've seen you doing something every now and then. Is that what it says? Oh, what? May your God whom you serve continually, consistently deliver you. Darius knew that Daniel served God consistently. How did he know that? Well, he certainly saw it in Daniel's walk. He saw it in Daniel's worship. He had observed all of that from Daniel's life, but I believe with all my heart, he had also heard it from Daniel's lips. I believe Daniel had told Darius story after story after story about his God. I believe he told him what had happened back in Daniel chapter 1 when God proved that his way was 10 times better than the way of the Babylonians. I believe he told him about what happened in Daniel chapter 3 when God came down and delivered Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego from the blazing fiery furnace. You see, in a pagan godless culture, Daniel had given an amazingly consistent, unyieldingly consistent witness for 70 years. Students, there is no substitute for that. If you're going to be able to stand up, stand out, and stand firm for God in a godless culture, you must be unyieldingly consistent in your walk and in your worship and in your witness, because consistency is what makes the difference. You give in one time, your witness is shot. Right? You fall one time, your testimony is damaged. So, consistency is what makes the difference. Now let me show you something here. The next morning, after Daniel had been thrown into the lion's den, guess what? Darius comes down. He's anxious. He'd been up all night. He'd been worried. And he comes down to the lion's den here. And he comes to where Daniel was. And he cries out with this question that is certainly the most important question in the book of Daniel. And aside from the question, what must I do to be saved? It may be the most important question in the entire Bible. So let's look at it. Verse 20. See it? Last part, Darius comes down and he says, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God whom you serve again, continually, consistently, has your God whom you serve continually been able to rescue you from the lions? Please don't miss what the king is saying here. Okay? He's saying, Daniel, we have been watching you serve your God all these years. We've seen you walk with Him. We've observed your worship of Him. We have heard your witness about Him. Daniel, you're always telling us that we need to accept this God of yours. So Daniel, I need to know, does this God who you consistently walk with, consistently worship, and consistently witness about, does this God really work for you, Daniel? Does He really come through for you? Does He really make a difference in your life? Verses 21 and 22. Here's the answer. Then Daniel said to the king, O king, live forever. My God sent His angel and shut the mouths of the lions, and they have not harmed me, because I was found blameless before God and before you. Daniel, has your God made the kind of difference that you said He makes? And He had. Listen, as we wrap this up, it is never enough to just live a private Christian life. It is never enough to have your own private devotions. It is never enough to have your own personal and private mountaintop experiences. It's never enough for you to be just a nice person, a friendly person, a moral person. I thought about that when Mr. Tim was sharing that powerful illustration this morning, you remember? Listen, you have got to have an observable walk with God. You've got to live a life of worship before God that demonstrates His ultimate worth and His ultimate authority in your life. And you've got to give a verbal witness to the difference He makes in your life. There is no such thing as a secret agent Christian. There is no spiritual CIA or FBI. You don't have the luxury of remaining undercover as a Christian. Because if the people out there don't see in you and hear from you the difference that Jesus Christ has made in your life, how in the world will they ever believe He can make a difference in theirs? They won't. So, last question. What happens when I am unyieldingly consistent in my walk and my worship and my witness? What's the result of that? This is some pretty exciting stuff here. Let's look at it quickly. Number one, when I am unyieldingly consistent in my walk and my worship and my witness, God will use me to draw other people to Himself. I want you to think about that. This is the opportunity God gives you and me. If we are unyieldingly consistent in our walk and our worship and in our witness, then God will work through us. He will use us actually to draw other people to Himself. Verses 25, 26, 27. Then King Darius wrote to all the people and nations and languages that dwell in all the earth. And he said, I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel. For He is the living God. He endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and He saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. And He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. Can I remind you, King Darius was a pagan. But he sounds like a psalmist. God has used Daniel to draw this man to Himself, to the reality of who he was. Why? Because Daniel's walk, Daniel's worship, Daniel's witness was consistent for 70 years. God honored that, and He used it to draw a significant person to Himself. Secondly, last thing, when I'm unyieldingly consistent in my walk and my worship and my witness, God will use me and give me even more opportunities to make a difference in my world. God will use me and give me even more opportunities to make a difference in my world. Now, verse 28, if you don't understand some of the history here, it's not going to mean so much to you, so let me tell you what's happening here. Verse 28 says, so Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius the Mede and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Okay, here's another kingdom. Here's another king. Here's another opportunity. Now, I don't have time to go into all of this, but if you want to see something really neat when you've got some time, go to the Old Testament book of Ezra. And you will read in Ezra chapter 1 that it was this Persian king, Cyrus, who allowed God's Old Testament people to finally return to Jerusalem, ending these 70 years of captivity that they had begun when Daniel was just a young man and King Nebuchadnezzar had taken them out of Israel and deposited them in Babylon. See, God used Daniel in the heart of the Persian Cyrus to do something that no one else had ever been willing to do, and that was to say to God's Old Testament people, we're going to end this captivity, we're going to let you go back to your homeland. From Nebuchadnezzar the Babylonian, to Darius the Mede, to Cyrus the Persian. For 70 years, Daniel had lived a life of unyielding consistency before God in a pagan culture. Everybody had seen it. Three kings and three empires had been impacted by it, and the Jewish people were finally able to return to Jerusalem because of it. Don't ever think you can't make a difference. Don't ever think that God can't take your single solitary life and do something far greater than you could ever imagine. Your character really matters. Your courage really matters. Your consistency really matters. You can stand up, stand out, and stand firm for God in a godless culture, and you can make a difference. Do you believe that? I hope you do, because God's Word says it, and it's true.